We are in a culture of worseness. It seems like everything is worse than ever before. And honestly, many things are. For today, let's talk about concerts, for one.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Many factors have come together to create this perfect storm of stressful, expensive concert experiences. Post-lockdown FOMO, nightmarish ticket sales, terrible concert etiquette. Let's start with that. A lot of people have been saying, it's like everyone forgot how to behave in public. Or for the younger fans, perhaps they never learned. They missed out on a few crucial years of socialization at ages when they would typically learn the norms of concert culture. Like, should fans have their phones out recording and taking flash pictures throughout an entire concert? Is it acceptable to scream every lyric, even during emotional quiet moments? Or incessantly yell at the artist to try to get their attention? I will say, these horror stories get me heated. Call me old-fashioned, but personally, I go to concerts to hear the artist and see them with my eyes. But anyway, bad concert behavior is not new. People have been complaining about it for forever. From 2014, why can't you ever shut up during a concert? The legacy of freedom is still a subconscious part of today's live concert experience. It's rock and roll, and I'm allowed to do whatever I want. These days, whatever I want mainly means not listening to the music. We face an epidemic of people with enough disposable income to ignore the event they paid for. This writer despises people who talk loudly throughout the entire show. Short exchanges are acceptable. What's gotten completely out of control is the prolonged, never-ending, half-shouted conversation that reduces a live performance to mere background music. Bad fan behavior can totally ruin the concert experience for other attendees and the artists themselves. Many musicians have talked about these issues, literally begging their fans to please chill out with like the excessive phone usage, maybe stop hurling things on stage. And then some fans turn on them. I legitimately don't understand how you can claim to be such a massive fan of someone and then be so disrespectful. It is rude, selfish, and entitled. And by the way, a lot of people put the whole blame on Gen Z, which is not fair or accurate. People of all ages act like this, unfortunately. Bottom line, if you are disrupting a show and people are asking you to stop, and your response is, I spent money to be here. I deserve to act however I want. Listen to yourself. Literally everyone paid to be here. We all want to have a good time, which means we all have to have mutual respect for everyone's experience. Anyway, in this video, I just want to explore what's been going on with concerts these days. I actually haven't been to a show post-lockdown for many reasons. One of them being I have developed a greater fear of crowds, and I just don't love certain environments anymore, sadly. But I'll be honest, all this conversation about how bad concerts are has really made me not want to book my next ticket anyway. So I'm wondering, is the culture really worse than ever? Or is it that we're bombarded with so much media, we are seeing so much more bad behavior, that it seems worse than it is? I can't definitively answer that, but I want to dig into some of the factors that I think are contributing to the problems. For one, I think a huge part of fan entitlement directly stems from the scarcity of concert tickets, scarcity that is often created or exacerbated by the ticket sellers themselves. Because just going through the process of buying a ticket is so difficult, that alone can give some fans a complex. They went through hell just to be here. No wonder they feel like the main character. But before we continue, this portion of today's video is sponsored by Milanote. Milanote is a tool for organizing your creative projects. It's very flexible and unstructured, so you can organize your ideas in whatever ways make sense to you. It's easy to get started. Milanote has over 100 built-in templates for all sorts of creative projects. And I find these so helpful. They inspire me to see the big picture, and then I can jump right in with my own vision. I'm currently planning a little short film project. I want to start making making documentary shorts about my family and friends, just for fun, for the memes. So far, I've used the film pre-production template and the storyboard. Next, I'll be working on my mood board and shot list. By the way, this web clipper plugin makes it so easy to save images and links directly to my boards. Then I can organize all my photos, notes, tasks, and everything else all in one place. I love that, especially in the messy early stages of a project, I can move things around, rearrange them. It's like a post-it note and strings wall, but with the ease and convenience of being digital. So I highly recommend checking out Milanote. You can sign up for free with no time limit. Click the link in my description and get started on your next creative project. So let's talk about ticket sales. Sheridan said this while we were writing, and I just had to include it. Getting tickets used to be a common ground, now it's a battleground. She also used the term fanimosity, so extra points for all the wordplay. Back in the day, buying concert tickets seemed a lot more straightforward. Just go to the box office or a record store. If you were really determined, you could camp out and make sure you were one of the first people in line.
They began lining up last Thursday, camped out in sleeping bags, blankets, or lawn chairs. By dawn today, there were about 1,000 waiting for tickets to go on sale. But most of the fans I talked to were happy with what they got. They didn't mind the wait.
Like, since yesterday, about 24 hours. I've been here a long time.
Would you stand in line like this for any other group besides Led Zeppelin?
Probably the Stones. Pink Floyd's coming soon. I'll do it for them, too. Just a couple of groups. Look at all these people, you know? What can you say? It's just great.
As Stephanie Holland wrote, ticket buying has never been perfect, but there was always a part of it that felt fair. If you were willing to put in the time, effort, and money, you at least had a real chance at getting seats. Some think we should just go back to the box office. Sell tickets in person. It's fair game. The most dedicated fans will be willing to wait. But in-person queuing does not work for everyone, especially if you're not able to physically stand in line for hours. Plus, having to take off work, travel to your venue of choice, that's a huge commitment. Thankfully, here in the year 2023, we have the internet. Technology makes everything easier and more convenient. Ticket sales are democratized and more accessible than ever. Psych. Have you heard of Ticketmaster? Gotta give a shout out to Live Nation Entertainment, which is comprised of Live Nation and Ticketmaster, the giants of the venue and ticketing industries, respectively. Thanks to that merger, if you're going to like pretty much any show in the US or dozens of other countries, it's probably controlled by them and there's nothing anyone can do about it. We love monopolies. Though I'm sure many of you have experienced this firsthand, perhaps very recently, let's walk through the process of trying to buy tickets for a popular tour. Whether it's Beyonce, Taylor Swift, or another superstar, it's gonna be rough. Most of the articles I read for this referenced the Eras Tour, so that's the example I'll be using. And the Eras Tour is pretty unique because Taylor Swift hasn't done this type of tour before, encompassing songs from her whole career. So in that sense, this tour is considered like once in a lifetime too many fans. As with any hugely hyped tour, we know they're gonna sell out quick, so everybody wants access to the pre-sale. But these have become so much more complicated, confusing, and time-consuming. Ticketmaster has a system called Verified Fans, which offers some pre-sale access. It actually has nothing to do with how much of a fan you are, though many people would prefer that. It's basically supposed to mean not a bot. You are a verified human consumer. There are also exclusive credit card pre-sales. Honestly, having the right credit card is usually the best way to secure concert tickets. Typically, American Express cardholders get the best benefits, and Amex is known for being a pretty exclusive card. We love granting special privileges and access to the wealthy. But with these ultra-competitive ticket sales, a lot of fans feel compelled to sign up for a new credit card or bank because they don't want to miss out on that exclusive access. That pre-sale might be their best chance. Here in the US, you pretty much have to have a credit card because of how our credit score system works. So you figure, might as well get one with some good benefits. There are nice perks if you know how to use them and you're able to pay off all your balances in full, but credit cards are inherently predatory. They want you to overspend, and they get to profit from your desperation. It's too easy to encourage fans to go into debt for these shows. Just buy your tickets on your shiny new card, and don't worry if you can't pay it back all at once. That's the point. any cost is worth it to see your fave, right? Anyway, the Eras Tour is actually partnered with Capital One, so any debit or credit card holders got access to that presale. Here's the thing though, between the verified fan system and other presales, too many people were granted presale access, which defeats the purpose. As soon as the presales opened, Ticketmaster crashed and all hell broke loose. This is from Ticketmaster's statement after the fact. Over 3.5 million people pre-registered for the verified fan presale, which is the largest registration in history. Around 1.5 million people were sent codes. The remaining 2 million verified fans were placed on a waiting list. There were lots of other issues, like tickets would be taken out of people's carts, or errors happened and it crashed and sent them back to the queue. Many tears were shed. From the New York Times. According to Ticketmaster, 2 million tickets were sold on Tuesday alone. Another presale for Capital One cardholders was held on Wednesday, but Thursday afternoon, Ticketmaster canceled its plans for a public ticket sale. It was unclear how many tickets had been sold for Miss Swift's tour and how many, if any, remained. That lack of transparency is a huge problem. We often don't know exactly how many tickets are on sale for a presale or for general. While you're in the queue waiting for hours, you don't know how many tickets are left. This dizzying experience often encourages some fans to literally buy whatever tickets they can get their hands on, just clicking desperately. And if you're lucky enough to end up with tickets in your cart, you're willing to pay pretty much any price. Speaking of prices, concerts are expensive. Did you know that? I found this comment on a Guardian article. My first concert was Led Zeppelin in 1975. Tickets were $7.50, $42 today. Prince in 1988 was $30, $77 today for general admission. Very expensive for the time, but what a show. I know, obviously with time and inflation, things are always more expensive than they used to be. But especially in the last few years, the rate of increases has been absurd. I actually feel like a broken record because I feel like this applies to every one of my video topics. I'm like, housing, food, everything is more expensive, significantly. Live Nation reports that US concert audiences have increased by 24% since 2019, with an almost parallel increase to average ticket cost, from $87 to $104. This is the justification for dynamic pricing. Ooh, dynamic. That sounds cool and innovative. Let's look at this article by Lucy Harbrin. To Ticketmaster, dynamic pricing is all part of a protective policy apparently designed to protect tickets from resellers. It's all about making sure that true fans are the ones who get those tickets. By that, I mean whoever's willing to pay the most. Dynamic pricing is all about supply and demand, meaning that the more people in the queue to grab a ticket, the more expensive it's going to get. Case in point, Beyoncé's Golden Circle tickets were originally priced at £140, but have now surged to over £400. I, for one, am so grateful for surge pricing. It definitely serves fans. Can you imagine if we were all competing to just pay like face value for tickets? So, you finally fought the Ticketmaster battle. You have dynamically priced $1,000 tickets in your cart. Your last hurdle is getting over the arbitrary fees. Going back to that Guardian comment, by 2001, Roxy Music tickets were around $75 plus $12 service charges, which is about $150 today. By that point, we were working media and did a story on Ticketmaster using this concert as an example of excess fees. The service fee from that comment was about 16% of the ticket value. Recent reports put the average fee at around 27 to 32%, sometimes even higher. Honestly, what are these fees even for? Why are you charging me a fee to send me an email? From Ticketmaster, ticket fees, which can include a service fee, order processing fee, and sometimes a delivery fee, are determined in collaboration with our clients. In exchange for the rights to sell their tickets, our clients typically share in a portion of the fees we collect. The portion of fees we keep helps us cover overhead, software, equipment, blah, blah, blah. Here's a recent example from The Cure's tour. As tickets went on sale, prices were nearly doubled thanks to hefty fees. Despite purposefully setting their prices at an accessible limit with tickets as low as $20 and opting out of dynamic prices, Cure fans still got shafted. Robert Smith fought back and actually convinced Ticketmaster to refund fans their fees, but that is extremely rare, and these ridiculous fees are totally the norm. It'd just be nice to see more artists like pushing back at least, even if it doesn't work. I'm just like, it'd be nice if you stood up for us, you know? What about the resale market? Often these concerts sell out in minutes, if not seconds. And then tons of tickets are posted to resale sites immediately at hugely inflated prices. The average resale price for concert tickets on SeatGeek has more than doubled since 2019, from $125 to $252 so far in 2023. For sold-out acts, the average price can be anywhere from $500 to over $1,000. How does this happen? Ticketmaster says they're trying so hard to fight the bots and the resellers. John Oliver did a great episode about this. I would probably get copyrighted if I use his clips, so I'm just going to share some quotes. For many top shows, less than 25% of tickets are initially released to the general public. Where do the other tickets go? They are deliberately held back to be sold in other ways. Often a chunk goes to credit card companies, plus professional ticket brokers who buy up tons of tickets, sometimes with the help of bots. Though Ticketmaster claims to want to stop resellers, that's not really happening. After an undercover investigation, Ticketmaster was accused of recruiting professional resellers who cheat its own system to expand its resale business and squeeze more money out of fans. Of course, they benefit from the inflated resale prices because they're still getting a cut of those even higher fees. And again from that episode, a government report found that professional brokers represent either the majority or the overwhelming majority of ticket sales. Isn't that so fun? We think we're mainly competing with only like millions of other fans, but nope. Anyway, when it comes to prices, I understand that live music shows are expensive to run and people need to get paid. There are many wonderful crew members and venue workers who literally make these events happen, but they're not the ones making tons of money, obviously. As far as artists go, because of the way that the music industry has changed, artists rely on concerts and merch revenue much more heavily. And I want artists to get paid, especially the smaller ones who aren't making millions per show. However, there's been more evidence that many major artists are actually complicit in the inflation of their tickets. Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails helped to expose this years ago. With the face value of tickets for the best seats so much less than what high rollers and avid fans are willing to pay, performers have to choose between letting resellers reap the profits of their work or cashing in themselves. And there's this great Vox article that outlines how Live Nation admitted to Billboard that they basically enable performers to hold back thousands of tickets and list them on resale sites themselves. This is what makes trying to figure out like the true market value or real market value of tickets so tricky. There are so many factors at play that influence the base price, the dynamic prices. It's hard as a consumer to know what a fair price would be, especially when some fans are willing to spend thousands for what would usually be a $100 seat. It really sucks that buying concert tickets, which should be exciting and a relatively simple transaction, has turned into such a genuinely terrible experience. Kate Solomon wrote, "The stress of trying to get Taylor Swift tickets this week led to feelings of anger and loathing. It's all part of a music culture that feels increasingly greedy and combative." I didn't mean for that ticket section to be so long, but once I started researching it, a lot of that was new to me, like the details, the specifics, and I just felt compelled to share it. But anyway, again, what does that have to do with people acting badly? Well, I think there's such a high barrier to being a fan these days that is heavily driven by the ultra-competitive nature of ticket sales, which contributes to fanimosity. Again, it's important to remember that even with the huge demand of these tickets, a lot of the problem is false scarcity. Most tickets are not offered to the general public at face value, so fans are forced to spend way more. And naturally, some fans might start to feel jealous or even angry at other attendees that they view as less deserving. I can see how it would be frustrating to like be at a concert and witness someone just totally not engaged in the show when millions of fans would practically die to be there. Now, of course, tickets are not sold based on how big of a fan you are, but that doesn't stop people from debating who is the most deserving. Here's my potentially lukewarm take. It is okay to go to a concert just because you want to go. There are a lot of accusations of like, oh, so-and-so's a fake fan. Oh, you barely know the artist. And I just think like part of the fun of concerts can be discovering new artists or going as a new fan or going just to listen, going along with a friend or a partner. Or just because you found random tickets. tickets that you thought, sure. Again, it gets dicey in these ultra competitive environments, but ultimately I think concert culture should be accepting to new fans, be welcoming, as long as they are acting respectfully. More from Kate Solomon. Obsessive fandom has been integral to pop since it began, but the network effects of online culture have intensified it. Fans often compete with each other to prove themselves the most worthy of their idol's love. There is online warring, and as in the case of a recent debate about who got to stand front row at a Boy Genius gig in the US, indignation about what kind of fan deserves the best access. Basically, all of this turns a concert into a much higher pressure, higher expectation event. Wanting that high cost and effort to be worth it, and seeking out that dream experience that you've been imagining and hoping for, can potentially, one, either make you extra sensitive to everyone else around you, anyone being annoying or disruptive, or two, can even make you act selfishly in pursuit of your perfect night. And by the way, before I get into more like bad behaviors, I just want to say that I know, especially in packed crowds, in loud places, everyone has different coping mechanisms. If you're neurodivergent, you might have different sensory experiences and it might be harder to cope. Again, I said I am not good in crowds and I can be sensitive to certain noises. So if whatever behavior you're doing is to, you know, calm yourself down and try not to get overwhelmed, I think that's totally fine. But most of the time when we're talking about people acting out at concerts, I think their behavior is not caused by them being anxious or overwhelmed. A lot of it just comes down to being a little self-centered and not caring about how your actions are impacting the people around you. So when it comes to the classic bad behavior, I've identified three main types of people, but really they're more like three flavors of the same thing. They can exhibit similar behaviors for slightly different reasons. We have the main character, the clout chaser, and the superfan. The commonality being generally centering yourself and being disruptive. Your experience is more important than anyone else's. You're more deserving. So what kind of things will they do? One, compete for physical proximity to their fave. Obviously, this has always been the case in concerts, but being close to the stage, being front row, being right at the barricades, that's always been brag-worthy. It's proof of your investment, either financial or like time, energy. Your dedication to get there. Many fans feel compelled to push closer in pursuit of that intimacy. Obviously, bonus points if you get a little hand touch or some eye contact, you grab the set list, but there are right acceptable ways to go about that, and then there are ways that go against concert etiquette. Two, constant photos and videos to an extreme extent at the expense of others. Again, I know a lot of people film and take pictures through concerts, but like if you're disturbing people, that's a little too much. And this obviously goes to the social currency of being a visible fan on social media, taking great photos, proving that you were at a close vantage point, potentially recording something, a moment that goes viral. A lot of fans are seeking that. This can honestly go back to pics or it didn't happen energy. You must capture every moment. What if you missed something? Even though literally so many people here are going to be filming at any given time, you want to try to get that moment. Now, most egregiously under this category are these self-records. I feel like this is a new phenomenon because I don't remember this from years ago. People are filming themselves. They're turning the camera around, often back camera with flash in the middle of the show to record their own reaction to what is going on. Now I get it. I'm a YouTuber, okay? I've made some vlogs in my day. I understand wanting to capture some moments of yourself or your friends, but with the flash on for an extended amount of time? And again, I think most importantly, it can be very bothersome to the people around you. The flash is blinding. They're trying to watch the show, but now they're in the video next to you or behind you. It can be uncomfortable. At least turn the flash off. And lastly, I don't know what number, as Kate Solomon wrote, there are attempts to crowbar yourself into fan lore. This might be the reason behind a lot of the out of place screaming, yelling random things, sometimes vulgar things, throwing stuff. You're desperately hoping that your fave is going to notice you. They might respond to you. And even if it's negative, at least you've won a reaction from them. You had your personal moment. And this behavior can obviously be so annoying and so disruptive to everyone. I'm always like, imagine if we all did that. Think about it for a second. Wouldn't that be a lot? And guess what? It's a lot when you do it. So tone it down. Anyway, in writing this video, I wanted to dig into why people are like this. And again, I can't describe why every single person acts a certain way. Some people might just be blissfully unaware. They just don't realize what they're doing is bothersome, and maybe once told, they'll stop. Also, some people are just assholes. They really are. Sometimes human behavior is not rational or easily explained. And ultimately, concert goers are not a monolith, even if we happen to enjoy the same artist. Now, lastly, sometimes what we think of as bad concert behavior is actually not anyone's fault. It can be more of a setting problem. Recent example, I saw this TikTok about how the crowd at this Maggie Rogers show was just really off. You know, Maggie's shows are often very high energy, very interactive, but there were people at the front of the show eating dinner at tables. Now, obviously, from that one TikTok, I'm getting one piece of the puzzle. The framing was from a fan who was used to Maggie's typical high energy attendees, dancing, singing. Then I saw more TikToks on my feed about it.
It would be disingenuous if I didn't express that this concert feels incredibly strange.
But here's the thing. I think this was not the fault of any of the attendees. The problem was incongruence. The artist and the venue, or at least the venue setup, were just not meshing well together. This was bad planning. In short, this was at the Hollywood Bowl, which often has these kind of dinner and a show performances. And there are donors, there are like season ticket holders. So those are probably the older attendees who were sitting at those front tables. To them, they just got more tickets to a show, to a venue they go to often, and they expected the behavior and the performance to be typical for that venue. A seated, chill kind of vibe. But for Maggie Rogers and the fans who went to see her expecting that high energy vibe, they were hype, they were ready to dance, because that's what's typical for her shows and for her usual audiences. So you put these together, a venue with a setup that doesn't work for the artist, some attendees expecting a chill vibe, other fans who want to get up and dance. It's not gonna add up. It's gonna be uncomfortable, and it was. And each side, depending on the framing, would look at the other thinking, what are you doing? They're behaving wrong. They're so rude. Again, this one boils down to a problem with the venue, a problem with the setup. Sometimes events just aren't organized in the ideal way, which results in bad experiences. Anyway, I've seen a lot of similar arguments about the right way to act at concerts. And of course, as we said, there is etiquette. Depending on the type of show, there are certain expectations, certain ways that the crowd will behave. I think it would be nice to have seated versus standing sections. I don't think it's fair to make that judgment. Like, oh, if someone's seated, that obviously means they're not engaged in the show. Many people have many reasons to sit throughout a show.
There should be room in the front for people who want to move and shout and scream and experience the highest volume levels. Those people who know every song want to be surrounded by those who know every single song. There should be room for people who can only sit or want to sit. There should be room for families. There should be room for people who have no idea who is playing tonight, or maybe who have even limited interest in the music.
So if you set those expectations, you have separate areas. People have the choice to be in a space that works for them. And ultimately, I think everyone would feel more comfortable if they're in a section that matches their energy. And here we are, near the end. One last question I wanted to ask was like, is music about community or is it about the individual experience? And in the process of researching this, I was trying to look back at like older fan behavior and not to over-romanticize Woodstock, because I know that's like too classic. But like Woodstock was muddy and rainy and honestly kind of terrible, like the actual physical experience. Many attendees could not hear the music at all. But reports all say that everyone was polite. Everyone was nice, at least. And I think that's what people love the most about the idea, the concept of Woodstock in hindsight. Peace and love. Coming together, sharing an experience, sharing food, helping other people around you. Having a collective experience and going along for the ride. From what I've seen, those seem to be like the actual best takeaways from Woodstock. And even though people have tried to replicate it since then, there was the disastrous Woodstock 99 that was like the opposite. I think those are basic tenets that we can all carry with us at any event or show. The circumstances might not be perfect. You might not have the best time. It might not be what you expected, but you can be kind and loving and have a good time with the people around you and hopefully hear some good music. Concerts are supposed to be a space to enjoy a common interest. Is that not the point? Anyway, I also have some solutions. On a big scale, obviously, I really hope that we can break up the Ticketmaster Live Nation monopoly. That's a very, very serious one, and it's huge. They have far, far, far too much control, and we gotta break that up. There's no way around it. Next, I found Ticket Buyer Rights. This is from the Ticket Buyer Bill of Rights website, and they are fighting for rights such as making sales transparent, make tickets transferable, get rid of bots so that we only have to compete with other humans. They list the right to set your price for resale, but I think for-profit resale should be banned. I'm like, let's go all the way. Take the profit motive out of this, or at least make it much, much harder for people to be able to sell tickets for profit. Another idea I saw in a comment, but I think it's great. Would love to see live streams of shows in local cinemas. It wouldn't suit every fan, but it would be a fun experience for many. And I think that's great. You could still get dressed up. You could still bring some friends, watch the concert, much cheaper, less busy. I'm like, wait a second. I never want to go to a show again. I'll just go to the movies. I just love the movies. That's all. And finally, on an individual level, any solutions? I'd recommend, just a thought, resist spending your rent money or getting into debt for mega arena concert tickets. It's so easy for FOMO to infiltrate our brains and make us feel like these extreme expenses are justified. But don't let it cloud your judgment, okay? If it really, truly is the concert of a lifetime and it's truly your fave of all faves, think it over. But let's not normalize like, yep, nosebleeds for $1,800. With that, I am not telling you don't go to shows or save all your money, don't buy tickets to anything. I actually recommend supporting smaller artists and smaller venues. There's a higher chance you might be able to meet the artist or get closer to them. You'll probably have a better time in a lot of ways. Okay, that is all. Look at how cute the light looks now that it's the end of the video. That's convenient. Thank you for watching. I hope you enjoyed this episode, as frustrating as this topic is. Thanks again to Milanote for sponsoring today's episode. Click the link in the description to sign up for Milanote and start your next creative project. And a thank you to my patrons. If you want to see bonus content that I make, behind the scenes stuff, personal stuff, you can check it out on patreon.com. And extra thank yous to my executive tier. We have Abby Hayden, Chloe Noel, Dalek Mems, Freshly Laundered, Ivy Adam, Jackie King, Jeanette B, Jill Hoffman, Matthew Gray, Megan Collins, MedCat33, Morgan Tisa, Nicole Louise, Sarah Kemi, Stevie May, and Truffa. Thank you so much for being patrons. All right, that is all. Stay tuned for another. Honestly, guys, I don't know if I'm going to continue calling this internet analysis, even though that's been the series ever since like the first accidental commentary series video that I made, because some people are like, it's not really analysis, or sometimes it's not about the internet. And I'm like, yeah, sure. Okay. It was just a name I made up in like 2018. I don't know. Not that this is a big deal to me or anything. Stay tuned for whatever next video or topic that I want to hyper-focus on for two-ish weeks. Okay, thanks, bye. He knows when it's the end of the video. You're a star.